Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the DRH Show. Today, I have the pleasure of hosting a visionary philosopher who comes from Ukraine. Recognizing the need for a fresh perspective in the world of psychoanalysis, she embarked on a path to introduce and elaborate on a concept that both intriguing and pioneering. Her work, Negative Psychoanalysis for the Living Dead, has already caught the attention of many in the academic and therapeutic spheres. And the platform she's crafted provides a deep dive into understanding the human psyche from a unique angle, challenging conventional notions. Julie Rasche, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here, Julie, and this is quite an interesting topic. But just to kick this off, could you just give me a snapshot of your background, your trajectory in life, and how you ended up doing what you're doing?
I was trained as a philosopher, and I consider myself to be a philosopher. And I also have background in psychoanalysis and existential therapy. And I also have diploma of a clinical psychotherapist, but I don't practice it. And had my own experience of depression, and I had troubles relating to a current perspective on how depression is treated and how it's perceived, maybe because of my philosophical background. So I kind of developed, based on all of that, my depression and my academic background, different perspective on trying to develop different perspective of what is depression and the negative states of existence, and trying also to practice something as an alternative to the practice of psychotherapy as it is normally practiced.
And Julie, you've not just chosen psychoanalysis, but there's a specific niche within psychoanalysis that you specialize, and that is negative psychoanalysis. So could you just please shed light on what exactly is negative psychoanalysis?
To be honest, negative psychoanalysis is the way I call psychoanalysis that I can tolerate. So it's a type of psychoanalysis the way I like it. I consider the negative psychoanalysis to be a theoretical approach and practical approach, something that I'm working on as alternative to dominant discourse of psychology, discourse of psychotherapy, which is dominant in our culture and which is positively oriented. And positive psychology is considered the psychology, so the way it's supposed to be, meaning it prioritizes positive sides of life or positive feelings and consider them, it is implied that those are desirable states and those are states of a healthy human psyche, which I would doubt. And I think that conventional, at least to me, conventional positively oriented psychology, I perceive it as insincere. There is something dishonest about it, about the way it perceives, maybe simplifies the world and perceives, implies a certain ideal of human being, of healthy human being, as positive and happy. And I think this is simplification, first of all, and this state is unreachable. So this positive agenda of psychotherapy and positive agenda of pop psychology, something I would challenge, and I find relief from this perspective in psychoanalysis precisely, and existential philosophy, more negatively oriented spheres, relief from simplified positive perspective, especially late Freud was when he get disillusioned in psychoanalytic cure. And I'm trying to figure out the perspective that would be alternatively negative, or at least not that positive, and that would challenge this perspective. And to me, it seems more honest and more sincere. When, for example, with my own experience of depression and the voice of depression, depressive outlook is normally pathologized automatically because of this positive orientation, when it's implied that positive outlook is a healthy outlook or desirable outlook, it implies stigmatization of a negative outlook, meaning depression or anxiety or those just in different types of inner suffering would be stigmatized and would not be even considered, that they would only be considered as something to get rid of. And people who associate themselves with this feeling and who believe in what depression is telling them would be also stigmatized and seen as the deviation from the norm, in need of treatment. No one even would listen to them or take them seriously. It would only be seen as a type of pathology.
Yeah, absolutely. I can hear what you're saying, Julie. So it's kind of similar to the notion of Pollyanna syndrome, that we just tend to magnify the positive aspects of life. And you're right in saying that you know, we have to strike a balance, that life is not just all about, you know, the pleasant things that's going on. And of course, Julie, you've written a book about this, as I've mentioned earlier during the intro, Negative Psychoanalysis for the Living Dead. And it has really captured my interest, but for the benefit of everyone who's watching this, what exactly is the thesis of your book? I suppose you'll kind of touch upon this, but what is the essence of your book?
The book was developed as alternative to positive outlook that is offered by psychology and that I perceive as dishonest. And I was trying to, based on late Freud and some other psychoanalytic thinkers, I was trying to offer alternative view of what is human being, what is world around us, what is society, without offering, without rushing into cure, without offering optimistic perspective, actually recognizing the tragic side of existence and perceiving it as incurable. And the book might be seen as, first of all, it's unhealthy book from psychologically unhealthy from perspective, conventional perspective of psychology, because it describes humans' existence without offering salvation, without offering any improvements. So the question is why I even wrote this book. But I was trying to maybe stay with the voice of depression in me instead of rushing away from it, just listening to it. What will it say? And maybe questioning why we are running away from it. What is there for depression to, what can your depression or just universal state of depression tell you if you listen to it? And this is unpleasant knowledge, or it's depressive knowledge, but nonetheless there is something there to listen to, and something there, interesting perspective of the world, that maybe there is some shared knowledge about the tragic side of human existence, and knowledge from which we are escaping into the discourse of, when we employ the discourse of psychology and the conventional discourse. Maybe there is something there to listen, and something we all, the knowledge we all share. So maybe depression is kind of universal human state that reveals the truths that we don't like, instead of rushing away from it into therapy. We can explore this space. And the book, I wouldn't recommend it to actually anyone, because, as I said, it's psychologically unhealthy, this perspective. And one might claim that, you know, it's just the voice of depression. This is one of the ways we escape listening to depression, just claiming, disassociating from it, claiming that it's not you talking, it's your depression talking, meaning depression is not us. This is, we perceive inner suffering, depression is something foreign to us, but maybe this is just the way of escaping from unbearable knowledge that depression reveals about the world. And so the book is rather for those who lost hope, because it doesn't offering hope and offering salvation, which is non-standard book, because we normally write books to explore something, to give answers or to improve something. Or if it's in psychology, it has to do with human suffering. It's necessary to get rid of the suffering or improve something. This book is different, doesn't offer hope, salvation, improvement. There is nothing there that I would claim without later being disillusioned in it. So whatever I'm saying, I'm also taking it. I can take it away and I can undo it. There is no perspective that it imposes. It's rather the exploration of confusion about the world, and without arriving to any solutions or any final meanings. But it's rather for those who lost hope themselves, or who find the perspective that is currently functioning in society, psychotherapeutic perspective or pop psychology, who cannot relate to this perspective, or who want to explore their depression or do something else with their depression, or who are unable to heal their depression. It's rather to the journey to the end of the dark night of the soul, that the book can be companion to, was instead of trying to drag person out of it. It's, if one wants the company in their depression, book is suitable. But otherwise, if you still have hope, then I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, it sounds really like it's a book that has a lot to take in. And you mentioned that it is an unhealthy book, and I would go on to say that it probably it's more than just unhealthy, because I understand that you've also introduced the concept of living dead within your book. So if you could just tell us more about it, what's living dead?
The concept of a living dead is normally when people who are traumatized, they would talk about themselves as someone who are living their own death, as impossibility of living their own life, as continuing to live within the impossibility to live, so the living dead. And I actually explore, and we normally perceive those people, trauma survivors who would describe themselves using those words, we normally perceive them as a deviation from human, the way they supposed to be healthy, actually living, not living dead. And I was trying to explore every human being, this human being as such, as the living dead, employing this concept, Heidegger concept, for example, of being towards death, or Freud's concept of the death drive, meaning that we are all in certain sense initially traumatized, so initially living dead. We are approaching our death. Death is something that operates upon us, that is present within life. It's not the opposite of life, and that's, it might be the main thing that is operating on us. And this is what our depression, some kind of knowledge that depression can reveal, and that we tend to escape from. So the living as being dead, or being dead while we are alive, that's not the opposite. And death as something structural to life and defining element of life, is not the opposite. So I was trying to see any human being at the core, human subject, as living dead. And whatever we think that we are not, dead inside, that we're just escaping a certain knowledge. And apparatus of psychotherapy might be one of the ways of mechanism to escape this knowledge, given the hope that you can live your life without dying. And psychotherapy that is normally offered to human subject is might be seen from this perspective, just eliminating kind of this knowledge, this depressive knowledge that we are all already died. And also I would claim that, it's not my claim, it's a Lacanian psychoanalytic claim, that trauma is constitutional to a subject. Trauma is always there as something that constitutes you. There is no continuity of life narrative, for example. There is the disruption that we feel, the emptiness within us, at the core of our existence, that any trauma, any traumatic event that we encounter in life just reveals this groundlessness of our existence, the core traumatic reality of our existence. And therefore, trauma rather constitutes subject, and this death within us, or nothingness, the absence of us that constitutes our presence. It would be interpretation of Heidegger's comprehension of the being towards death, as nothingness that constitutes the presence of us. And this traumatic knowledge is at the core of the subject, but the psychotherapy and other practices in our everyday life just help us sometimes to escape from this knowledge. And certain traumatic events just make it impossible to escape from this knowledge. They just reveal it to us, this groundlessness or initial trauma of existence, as too obvious, and we are not able to use the everyday normal coping mechanism to forget about it. So the living dead is each of us, just the perspective of seeing human life, the depressive perspective of seeing the human subject.
Now, my question to you, Julie, is, you know, when you talk about this negative psychoanalysis, this kind of like philosophical pessimism or depressive realism, if you will, I was wondering if this is sort of positioned as a form of therapy, and if this is positioned as a form of therapy, how would you differentiate it from other therapeutic modalities?
So negative psychoanalysis, in a similar way, like psychoanalysis has, which has theory to it and the practical side to it. There's certain theory about human psyche or human being as such and human society, and there is also practice that Freud initiated. And in a similar way, maybe there is the certain theory that is in elaboration and it's never certain, and it's collective work of the negative psychoanalysis. And there is maybe possible practice to it, which is in psychoanalysis, it's therapeutic practice initially, even though later Freud got disillusioned in therapeutic effect of psychoanalysis. And I would stay with Freud, who is disillusioned, claiming, revealing that psychoanalysis doesn't work the way psychoanalytic cure doesn't work the way Freud initially hoped it works. But I would maybe suggest that the therapy or the practice that comes with negative psychoanalysis is not therapeutic in a sense of a cure, but it's a different type of practice. It's practice that doesn't try to fix, it doesn't have more free from the positive bias. It doesn't try to fix other person. This problem with fixing, or the problem with therapy as a cure, is that there is the one of the problems is that there is the hierarchy of someone, of a therapist who knows how human being supposed to be, what is the healthy psyche, and it kind of, they perform a function of the savior, someone who knows how to save and who knows how to fix and who knows how healthy psyche is supposed to look like. And it implies the hierarchy. This is actually what we're looking for. We want someone to save us, and we want someone to know what is healthy state of a psyche and how to bring us to this healthy, happy state of a psyche. So the problem with it that it implies the hierarchy and implies someone knowing, someone who is in need of treatment. And I would doubt the whole structure, and I'm looking for the practice that would not try to fix, that would get rid of the, at least to some extent, of the hierarchy of one knowing and the other one is in need of treatment. Maybe something more respectful, just exploring together and without also escaping from the tragic side of existence, but more of exploring this tragic side. Because if this positive bias that a healthy human psyche is in its healthy state, it's happy and deprived of depression, for example, and other kinds of suffering, it implies that fixing, curing this this person would imply getting rid of all of those negative states. But from negative perspective outlook and from existential philosophy, for example, perspective, those negative states might be constitutive for human subject, and which means that if we're trying to get rid of them and they are constitutive, we're just trying to get rid of human subject as such. And the relationship that we build upon this aim, with this goal, are very artificial and very strange. And it implies, again, when we talk about within this perspective, when we talk about depression, we only talk in about depression in terms of how to fix it, how to get rid of it. But what if depression or anxiety are constitutive to human subject? What if only through those discourses we reveal who we are, which means trying to get rid of them would mean to get rid of the subject we are talking to, or we are discussing. So I would claim maybe that negative psychoanalysis is a therapy, or there is a practical side to it, but it's not, it doesn't have an aim of cure or aim of fixing person. And it's more free from the positive bias, and there is less hierarchy, and there is less knowing what to do. The therapist wouldn't perform a function of a savior, pretend that they know what to do, and operating using the expertise and knowledge on the other human being. But rather be a space of exploration of that doesn't try to get rid of human pain, and there is more respect of inner suffering, of inner pain, of the voice of inner pain and negative sides of existence. And maybe this perspective recognizes human better than the other perspective and other types of therapies.
Julie, just to go back to your point about hierarchy, because while I was listening to you, I hear what you're saying about, you know, that there seem to be some power dynamics involved, and that's not the kind of relationship that, you know, you would want to see in a therapeutic relationship. But I can't help but think that, isn't it that any form of hierarchy is inherent in any relationship? You know, just to give you an example, let's say within the healthcare sector, you know, like if we've got problem with, you know, we've got problem, we have to see a GP. And we know, just to borrow your term earlier, that that GP has, you know, have got more experience, more qualifications. So in a way, they kind of act like a savior. So wouldn't you acknowledge that that kind of power dynamics should also be present within, you know, the psychotherapeutic landscape?
Well, within the negative psychoanalysis, I'm looking for something that won't have power dynamics, that won't imply the hierarchy. And of course, I'm failing in this because, first of all, there is still the role of a therapist, which imply, and the role of a patient, which implies the power dynamics. So it's kind of impossible goal, but at least maybe some kind of challenge to it, where the one who performs the role of the therapist acknowledges that they don't know, that they are exploring together with the patient something and they never arrive to the state of knowing, and they never arrive to a state of healing, because healing ultimately is impossible. So they rather share as human beings the absence of hope or disillusionment, just standing in this disillusionment together and facing the tragic side of existence together. So it is impossible to get rid completely from the hierarchy. At least one might say that the perspective, the view that there is a hierarchy might be implied to anything, but there is maybe more accent on something different going on within this kind of relationship, instead of one person relying on the expertise, helping other or fixing other. There are other things that people can do with each other, other options.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about depression. I appreciate the fact that you've been quite open and transparent about your lived experience of depression, and obviously it's a complex subject. But in relation to negative psychoanalysis, how does negative psychoanalysis propose a fresh approach towards addressing depression?
Well, I'm trying to elaborate language that would work in a different direction from just annihilating depression, because once depression is mentioned within our society, which is a therapeutic society, meaning it's dominated by discourse of psychology, once we bring it into language, we automatically add to it cure word like cure or so we talk about it in order to stop talking about, not to talk about it, not to go into it. And whatever something is we consider depressive, it means that there is the aim here to annihilate it, not to listen to it, to talk about depression in order not to talk about it. And as I mentioned, if someone would say that they are depressed and that they have negative depressive outlook, they're going to be, what will follow is the intention to disassociate person from this experience, to present depression as something, the sickness or something in need of treatment, meaning something that we shouldn't listen to. So I'm trying to deal with depression in a negative way and in a different way, negative. And there is tradition, philosophical tradition, existentialism, for example, that deals not with depression, but with other negative states or negative sides of existence, such as anxiety, in a different way, actually exploring it, and instead of trying to get rid of it. And I would be somewhat close to perspective of depressive realism here. Depressive realism, that is also the alternative to usual comprehension of depression as the inadequate perception of reality. Depressive realism would claim that it might be all actually depression might be revealing the truth of reality, that reality either might be, it might be adequately to perceive world, to be depressive, depressed in this world, or that realistic perception of or the depression allows more realistic perception of the world. So which means depressive realism implies that depression reveals some kind of truth. And I would agree with this partially, except for I think that depression does, we can say, reveal truth, but it's truth or depressive knowledge. It's not knowledge that makes us more adapted to reality. We know reality better, so therefore it gives them something like improvements in this way. I don't think it's the knowledge that serves as adaptive, as adaptation, it helps the adaptation. And I don't think that this knowledge makes us more realistic, meaning more adapted to life. There is other types of the other comprehension of knowledge is possible. For example, knowledge that trauma reveals, the rather impossibility, the failure of all the of any meaning to hold on to. It's not the knowledge, what reality is actually is. It's rather horrifying knowledge that you cannot put into words or you cannot hold on to. It's knowledge as non-knowledge, knowledge as collapse of all the knowledge, knowledge that is opposite to adaptive. But nonetheless, I think it knowledge that because of that precisely, it's the knowledge that still deserves a great respect. And in comparison to this kind of knowledge as non-knowledge, other types of adaptive knowledge are just escape mechanism from this more dishonest than this kind of knowledge of depression.
So Judy, in the broader therapeutic landscape, where do you see the gaps or issues that negative psychoanalysis seeks to challenge? Like, what's the end game of this?
Well, if the therapeutic outlook is positively oriented, it emphasizes happiness and emphasizes positive states and well-being. Negative psychoanalysis would rather challenge, maybe, this bias and emphasize more, stay more faithful to negative sides of existence, such as, or just the tragedy, recognizing the tragic side of human existence without escaping it that much, or trying to escape it that much. And also, it's not negative psychoanalysis, it's not certain outlook that I want to impose and or introduce as improvement to anything. I just think that maybe world today becomes more and more disillusioned and more depressed. Even if there is more and more research in how to fix depression, there is more work done on how to cure depression or prevent depression, which obviously with the rise of depression doesn't work. So maybe we'll just, something is happening with us that we become more depressive or more of a depressive realist, and just maybe we need, there's supposed to be some alternative to positively oriented therapy, which just becomes not, something inadequate in the world where people are depressed, or something that feels dishonest in the world of depressed people. And if the positive perspective or positively oriented psychology won't work anymore, the people will stop trusting it, won't be able to trust it, maybe there is supposed to be a certain kind of alternative of what we can do with each other, apart from trying to save each other from depression and employing the conventional psychotherapeutic perspective.
Now you frame the current landscape of conversations about psychotherapeutic approach as rather dishonest or disingenuous, as you put it. And one of the things that I kind of associate with it is the term toxic positivity. So how would you define toxic positivity? And just in conjunction to that, because I might be also kind of guilty with this, because I run a platform which publishes a range of articles. And I have to admit that a lot of the articles that I publish are leaning towards positivity. And I have to acknowledge that it's because we have a culture that dominates, a self-help culture. So what concerns do you have about this trend? And I suppose I want to learn from you, Julie, like platforms such as PsychReg, what can we do to kind of even out the conversation when it comes to, mental health and positivity? What can we do as a sector, if you will?
So toxic positivity, well, current culture was criticized numerous times for being being positively toxic. We normally call some people that way who are overly toxic or overly positive and imposing perspective, their positive perspective on us, like be happy or don't worry, meaning when they dismiss their negative feelings and impose the imperative of happiness too much on us. But the culture in general can be called, can be defined as toxic positivity is functioning with it. And the whole apparatus of psychotherapy can be defined as positively toxic precisely because it implies the positive bias that you're supposed to be happy. And it's your responsibility. That's the idea of self-help culture, that it's your own responsibility. And there are techniques, mechanisms, how one can become and one's supposed to be happy and positive. And the other side of it is pathologization of depression. Depression is considered something you're supposed to get rid of, something you're supposed to go to a professional to cut it out of you as the sickness. But I actually came to like some of the factors of self-help culture, apart from all that standard criticism of the positively oriented culture. I would claim that there are other perspective to approach to understand what is happiness and to understand some of the practices that self-help techniques offer. You can also employ negative perspective on happiness, and this is the only way, the only perspective I'm able to tolerate happiness is, for example, Kierkegaard would claim that everything is despair, so every human being encounters a despair, experiences a despair, even if they don't know it, but it's the human being, the state of existence for a human being is being in despair. And happiness is one of the kinds of, one might be seen as one of the types of despair, just the one, and kind of very sad and tragic kind, because it presents itself as the opposite. But despair for Kierkegaard, at least, it's always there. So if any human being is this living dead and constitutes post-traumatic subject, and there is trauma to everyone's existence and everyone's life is tragic at the core of it, meaning happiness is also one of the, can be perceived in a negative way as one of the sides of the tragedy, of one of the shades of the tragedy. And also toxic positivity might be considered is if life is trauma, based on trauma, it can be perceived as certain trauma response, especially toxic positivity. Trauma response meaning we have knowledge that trauma reveals, the knowledge how world is terrible and how everything is horrifying and the life is tragic. But precisely because of this knowledge, we desperately try to escape into the opposite perspective. So in certain way, this toxic positivity, the way it functions, the way it tries to escape from tragedy and to stigmatize, pathologize tragedy, it can be seen also as form of manifestation of knowledge of the opposite, knowing too well and something and desperately trying to escape from it, but failing, of course, because life is tragic. And I came to like some of the self-help rituals precisely because they remind me of rituals of death, like take a nap, or they are presented as aimed at well-being, but they actually might be seen as the rituals of introducing death, of the our desire to die or to disappear, like take a nap, or light candles, or go for a walk, or journaling, or reading a book, they might be all seen as the introduction, as death practices, as introduction of death, disappearance of self, forgetting about self, a denial of self into existence. It's the, you know, little doses of death, of disappearance, of non-existence, here is there, just to keep on with the horrifying existence. So there are some points where I would accept the post-toxic positivity and self-help culture.
Well, thank you for sharing your insights, Julie. Obviously, there are so many things that we can talk about, positivity and, you know, the pros and cons of positivity and pessimism and so on. But time is against us, so I'd like to wrap up this conversation with some, I apologize, because I'd like to wrap this up with some lighthearted, quick-fire questions. So we'll put negative psychoanalysis in one corner for a bit. So I've got three quick fire questions for you, Julie. First is, what were you afraid of as a child?
Darkness.
Okay. And what is your favorite word in another language?
Страждання, meaning suffering.
Suffering. It's very, very suitable for your line of philosophical interest. And if you haven't been a philosopher, what would you have pursued in your life?
Comedian.
And finally, the floor is all yours. What should people take away from today's conversation? What's next for you? And tell us about your book. Where can we get it? I would imagine it's available on Amazon.
The book is available at Amazon. Again, I don't recommend you to read it unless you're really desperate and you're looking for a partner in your suffering. If you're lonely there and you want someone suffer even more, the way I'm suffering is through this book. If you want your suffering to get even worse, then you're welcome to read it if you're not afraid of the depression ahead of you.
And that's quite an unusual way to invite people to read a book. But thank you, Julie Rashe, for sharing to us your insights and your expertise. And it's been a pleasure having you here in the DRH show. I look forward to hearing more about your work.
Thank you, Danny.